Blog Talk Radio.
And all access football exclusive.
Welcome to Draft Digest Weekly, right here presented by NFL Draft Bible Live, each and every Thursday on the Fantasy Sports Channel, 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. If you want the skinny on all the NFL draft prospects and not just the old household names, the deep sleepers of the draft, the diamonds in the rough, let NFL Draft Digest Weekly take you there with our on-location coverage, live reports, and detailed analysis as we track the path to the 2011 NFL Draft. Draft Digest Weekly is presented by NFLDraftBible.com, airs every Thursday on the Fantasy Sports Channel, 5 p.m., 6 p.m. Eastern. I am your host, Joe Everett, and we have an exciting show lined up for you this week. We're going to be recapping the All-Star Games, how it affects the draft board. The NFL Combine, believe it or not, is only 2 weeks away, folks. It's hard to believe. It's that soon, kids, but we'll be flying out to Indianapolis. We will have on-location coverage here in my backyard for all the workouts, all the prospects you want to know about. But before we do anything, we have on the line with us Ralph the Reverend Mancini, Executive Editor, NFL Draft Bible. Ralph, thanks so much for joining us. Hard to believe we're 77 days away from the draft already.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is my favorite part of the year. You know, just, you know, when we could just, like, sit back and analyze what we've seen during all of these All-Star games. I mean, it just doesn't get any better than that.
Now, Ralph, I hate to do it to you, but I got to start you off and throw you a curveball off the show notes as it is. The news of the day, Cam Newton, he's back, held some private workout for select members of the media at 1 p.m. Eastern, throwing passes, taking snaps from under center and showing the ability to drop back. He was reportedly impressive. Trent Dilfer of ESPN has said he was making pro throws that not a lot of passers in the league could make. He went on to say, Ralph, that this performance will skyrocket his draft stock. I guess somebody should tell Trent that we've had Cam projected as a early first rounder for the last 2 months. What is it? But be that as it may, sir, where do you see Cam Newton now and just getting to gauge the temperature on his stock in your eyes?
Well, I mean, it comes as no surprise that he impressed people with his raw physical skills. I mean, you know, you take a look at his size and his arm strength and his ability to break the pocket. I mean, those are just, you know, qualities that you just don't see every day in a quarterback. I mean, you know, to me, you know, the truth is really going to come out in how he does, you know, with pressure in his face when he has to try to dissect coverages. You know, I mean, in the NFL, he's not going to be able to run at the drop of a hat. You know, he's not going to be able to do that consistently and expect to be successful. You know, when his first guy's not open, when his first read's not open, he just can't tuck that ball down and run all the time like he has in the past. So, you know, I mean, it's great that he showed off his physical skills, and obviously that's something that you definitely have to consider before drafting a quarterback like that, but to me, there's so many other things you have to look at when evaluating a quarterback beyond his physical tools.
Agreed. It will be difficult to out-physical defenders at the next level like he has been able to do. And a little bit of a mockery there, you know, conducting your own public workout just almost reminds me of Terrell Owens. I was waiting for Cam Newton to do some sit-ups, maybe take questions while doing the sit-ups, but hey, we just reported, folks, he is a first-rounder, though. Don't let anybody fool you. The raw ability, it's intriguing for those scouts. But we're going to start it off, Ralph, right? It's the All-Star Wrap. Time to talk the risers, the sliders, gliders, fallers, stallers. Their prospects falling on their back. While other folks have put their names on the maps, first, we want to talk about the people that really hurt their stock the most this week. Could you give us a few names out there that you saw really hurt their stock?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to give all three All-Star games equal time. So I'm going to pick out a player from each of those All-Star games. And I'll start off with Chris Matthews, the big wide receiver out of Kentucky. I thought he did not look very good in the Texas versus Nation game. I mean, the guy looked actually pretty slow. He was very late out of his breaks. He was really never in position to catch the football in a timely manner. And it kind of disappointed me because I watched him during the regular season, and he did have some good performances. I remember, you know, one showing that he had versus Florida where he made big play after big play. But again, you know, yes, he is 6'5". Yes, he can catch balls over his shoulder. He's a long strider and everything, but he's not quick. He's not a good route runner. He doesn't sell his routes, to the defensive backs when they're defending him. So to me, I don't know. A lot of people are projecting him as a tight end. I could definitely see that down the road. He definitely does not look like a number one or a number two receiver at the next level. The other guy, I really don't want to get too much into him because I talked about him a lot last week, was Jake Locker. I saw a lot of holes in his game that would make me worry. To me, he is still a project. The other guy during the Senior Bowl that really didn't show me much of anything was DeMarcus Love out of Arkansas playing the offensive tackle position. I mean, the guy looked absolutely sloppy. He has like two left feet in his drops. Footwork is just awful. And the thing that worries me about Love is I've watched him now for a while. You know, you saw him in the bowl game against Ohio State where he was just no match for Cameron Hayward. And again, he was getting beaten like a drum by Ryan Kerrigan in the Senior Bowl. So, you know, when it comes time to go up against top competition, DeMarcus Love has come up small. And I think at this point, you would have to say that he's a guard. And I think his stock has dropped precipitously. And finally, the other guy that I think had probably the worst performance out of all these players I just mentioned was over in the East-West Shrine game, Jared Johnson, the quarterback, the big quarterback out of Texas A&M. And, I mean, this guy just didn't do anything right, has a long delivery, was inconsistent, an awful decision maker, was throwing off his back foot. And you know, the thing about him is that he has 35-inch arms. And when it comes to quarterback, there's nothing wrong with being 6'5", but there is something wrong with having long arms. Those 35-inch arms means he has a long delivery, and that type of stuff just doesn't jive in the NFL. And, you know, at one point last year, you know, people had high hopes for him. Right now, I would tell you that he's not even draftable. I wouldn't touch this guy. So Jared Johnson is the guy that really, out of all of these names, I think probably played the worst out of all of these players that I just brought up.
Well, I can vouch for the Jared Johnson just watching him in practice. I mean, just decision-making, passes that hit the fence surrounding the field. I mean, it wasn't even close. You talk about not being able to hit the broadside of a barn. This is that guy, unfortunately. And I would agree, it may be time for a position change for Mr. Johnson. And also with Love, he's a guard, and he went out and proved that out there. I'd have to agree. The only addition I could make is a guy that really I would be remiss if I didn't comment on his Senior Bowl performance, Ralph, was Greg Jones. I thought he was much more athletic than what he showed. Struggled to find the right lanes, and really just, I hate to say, you know, you let me down, Greg Jones, but honestly, he did, and I just don't see how he's at the top of that inside linebacker list anymore after what he did in Mobile.
Yeah, I hear you about Greg Jones, and he certainly did not play well, and his draft stock's going to go down as a result. But, I mean, I kind of take issue with people that, you know, criticize him for not being the type of linebacker that can cover backs and tight ends in coverage and pass coverage. I mean, because really, if you watch them play with Michigan State, he's not the type of guy. He's not a three-down linebacker. He is more of a two-down linebacker, more of a run stuffer. But I hear what you're saying about him filling lanes. He definitely didn't show his best. For those who were surprised that, you know, he's not a three-down linebacker, I mean, if you ever watched that Michigan State, he was never that type of player to begin with.
Yeah, definitely showing that it is all-star coverage here on Draft Digest Weekly. You want to get involved in the show, check out our online uber-cool chat room. You can also give us a call over at 347-945-6275. Ask our draft gurus questions you want to know. We're talking about the guys now that may have put themselves on the map, smaller, lesser-known prospects that now after this month, Ralph, they're amongst that conversation of some higher picks. Who are three prospects for you?
Yeah, well, number one, from last week's Texas versus the Nation game, a guy that really, really opened some eyes was the defensive end Roberto Davis out of Northwest Missouri State. I mean, he just looked like a stud. He was a little jumpy early in the game. He jumped off sides, but in the second half, he was just amazing. He showed the ability to bend the corner with his sudden acceleration. He overpowered guys. On one particular play, Josh Davis out of Georgia, he pushed them all the way back into the quarterback. And the thing about him is that he's got those long arms, which are a good thing as a defensive end as opposed to being a quarterback. So, you know, he's got that ability to get underneath bigger blockers as well and get penetration. So, hey, you know, we know there are a lot of teams out there looking for those pass rushers, and, you know, this is a guy that might be available in those later rounds. So, obviously, going into the Senior Bowl, a guy that, you know, I mentioned during last week's show, I really don't want to get into him that much, was Phil Taylor out of Baylor, a big 340-pound stud, a guy who, with his amazing size, can pursue plays laterally, could play the nose tackle position. Then the other guy is John Reed out of the East-West Shrine Game, the right tackle out of Florida, Central Florida. Big hulking 6'7", 325-pound right tackle. I thought he was just overpowering in the running game. He pushed people around, engulfed people with his long, powerful arms. He does tend to get a little high in his stance at times, but those are things he can fix. I like the way he doesn't lean into his opponent. He does not knock himself off balance. I think he really showed me a lot. And then finally, again, also from the Senior Bowl, was Richard Sherman, the cornerback out of Stanford. He was a late arrival, but this kid, I mean, he came up and he put some big hits on people, big hits on Derek Locke, one on Hankerson, Leonard Hankerson. And, you know, he showed the ability to really cover guys man on the man-to-man coverage and sticking with them, not giving up a lot of separation. He's got the size. He's got the speed. Checks in at about 6'2 to 6'3. I thought he really showed me a lot as well.
Yeah, I'd like to vouch for Ja Reed, too. I mean, he's so big and massive, yet there is no fat on this guy. Looking at him, just standing next to the – he's so lean, too. It's like, you know, it's all basically muscle, very imposing character. And I agree, Phil Taylor was just a man-child during practice, during the game. The other Shrine game I got to add, Delone Carter, the running back, I mean, he was just impressive for a 225-pound back, and he's so compact. It's just amazing to see a guy like that move. You know, he's going to be able to break not only a lot of tackles in the NFL, but he's got the speed and agility. Were you also impressed with Carter?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Carter is the type of guy who, I mean, you take a look at him, he's big, he's squatty, he's about 5'8", 225 pounds, he's got the big arms, almost looks like a poor man's version of Thomas Jones. But he's actually got some burst to him as well. I mean, he's got that first step quickness where he could just, if he gains a step on you, he'll just blow right by you. So that really impressed me a lot about him. He's a north-south runner, doesn't have any wasted movement or any wasted motion about him. I think this guy is built for the NFL.
Absolutely. It's a guy that he just, you know, each time I try and adjust those rankings, it's like, wow, he keeps creeping up our board. But,
what do you think at this point? Do you view him as a second or third rounder? I mean, where do you see him?
Well, it's tough because of running back's value in the draft
right.
and being a
right.
very stacked defensive class this year. I don't think he can sniff the first, and second round still is traditionally pretty rich for the stock of a back, but I do believe a team's going to see him as, boy, we could feature him. I mean, he's not going to be, I guess that every down back is lost in today's game, but he's a guy that could do a lot for an NFL team. So I could say, yeah, late second round would be right around that fit for him, I think.
Mm-hmm. I could see that.
Now, speaking of guys that continue to rise up the boards, and it's just prospects that not only do we tweak these rankings, but we talk with other scouts, other football people that continue, the names keep coming up. Who are three players that just continue to rise up the board every time you adjust it, Ralph?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm going to bring up two guys that I saw in the Texas versus the Nation game last week, and I'm going to start off with Clay Nurse, the defensive end out of Illinois. He's just a punishing defender. He picked up steam in the second half last Saturday. He showed off a sudden burst into the backfield. You know, he gave Josh Portis problems. He applied heavy pressure on Ryan Colburn. The play that really impressed me when I watched him was one where he was coming around the corner. He slapped down Derek Newton's hands, and he just has this amazing closing speed on the on that one sack where he brought Colburn down. I mean, there were like no wasted steps, no wasted movement. This guy looks like a guy that has the potential of being the premier pass rusher. Another guy, a small school guy, and we've talked about him before, but I have to bring him up again, and that's Kendrick Ellis, the huge defensive tackle out of Hampton. The guy is 340 pounds. He gives people a lot of trouble, especially when they try to block him one-on-one. He just totally abused Isaiah Thompson. He's got this hip movement about him that makes him pretty special for a guy that size. He also can drop back into coverage. What amazed me, or I should say impressed me the most about him, was just his raw power, that jarring punch that he used to turn offensive linemen sideways. He also had a quarterback sack during that game. So he's got the size, the arm length, the strength that I mentioned. You know, if he could improve his mechanics and his technique a little bit, I think the potential is, the sky's the limit for this guy. And then, finally, another guy that just keeps getting better and better is Ryan Kerrigan, another Big Ten product, the defensive lineman / outside linebacker out of Purdue. This kid has been explosive off the edge in the Senior Bowl. He gave James Carpenter fits by turning the big man's shoulders. He's got that lethal first step. He also gave DeMarcus Love a lot of problems. And the thing about him is that he's a heady player, puts himself in position to make tackles, whether it's pursuing the quarterback on a quarterback scramble. He just keeps coming, doesn't take plays off. He's in great physical shape. And to me, I think Ryan Kerrigan is another guy whose potential is just beyond the roof.
Oh, a high motor player, too, and just a really good kid. I've got a huge bias because he is from Muncie, Indiana, and I'm from Indiana, so I definitely like him. He even knew about my high school and the players from Purdue that had played for Warren. I really had to give him some respect. Another guy I have to add, it's just, The guy that was so impressive at the Senior Bowl and the other Baylor guy who's making a name for himself is Danny Watkins. Moving inside to guard, just looks like a natural. He looks like a seasoned vet. I guess that's part of being 26 years old. Be that as I'm just very impressed with what he's done, and continually we look at where things stack up. Not only is he one of the best interior prospects out there, there's talk that he is going to be a mid-first rounder among some very respected draft gurus out there. So Watkins is not only a name to watch, but even doing these interviews, hearing the other players talk, Southern Arkansas, the defensive tackle Cedric Thornton gave Danny Watkins a lot of credit as being the most difficult matchup in Mobile for him. So I think getting the respect of the other players. Watkins is the guy that, you know, it's not out of the question that he could be a first rounder. You know, it only takes one GM, Ralph.
Well, hey, yeah, exactly. Exactly. I remember that's what Tim Tebow used to say all the time last year, and lo and behold, that one team was right there for him at the end of the first round. So, hey, you never know.
It could happen. It's not out of the question. And I'll tell you what will happen. We are going to be on Live on Location NFL Combine, and we're going to talk about the prospects that looking in ahead of speed, just getting the crystal ball out. These are guys that really need to perform well come February here, and I'll let you kick us off, Ralph. Could you give us three guys that I think the pressure may be on them?
Yes, you know, I'm going to bring them up again, and that's Jake Locker. I mean, I don't know. I guess there are, you know, different views about him. Maybe some people like them more than I did, but, you know, I just didn't see the type of quarterback that could sit in the pocket and complete passes with pressure on him. Didn't make great decisions, and the accuracy is not there. So to me, I think Jake Locker can really help himself by showing off what he has in terms of his athleticism, in terms of the size, the speed, the strength, the raw strength that he has. So I think those are the things he really has to sell in order for him to be maybe a late first-round pick, although I wouldn't touch him in the first round. But I think it's going to be a very, very big week for him in that regard. The other guy, I think, is Marvin Austin. I mean, here's a guy who, to me, has first-round talent, but we just haven't seen a lot out of him in over the past year or so because he has been suspended. And, you know, even during the East-West Shrine game, and you saw him up close and personal, I mean, yeah, he made a lot of great plays, and he was one of the best players there, but the stamina wasn't just there. I mean, he just didn't have the stamina to stay or keep up with a lot of the other players out there, which is understandable, I mean, because of his long layoff. But, you know, one of the knocks against him, even when he did play regularly back in 2009, is here's a guy with immense talent, but that takes plays off. So now I think this is Austin's big chance to really show everybody that not only is he a good player with good skills, but here's a guy that, you know, is going to keep himself in shape and a guy that, you know, is going to be able to be, you know, hopefully down the road, a three-down player, a guy that could be a productive guy for 60 minutes. So I think it's going to be very key for him to do well. And also, finally, another guy is Evan Royster. You know, here's a player that was very, very productive in college. Obviously, he was Penn State's all-time leading rusher, which is very impressive. But, you know, the thing about him is that nothing really excites you about the guy because he's not a sudden player. He's not explosive. He doesn't have a lot of speed. What he does is he gains his yards by using his vision, by using his power, and he's a good pass catcher, and he's a good blocker as well. So he does have something to offer, but he's not a special player. And so to me, I think that if he goes out there and shows teams that, you know, if he can run a 4-5, you know, maybe, you know, they'll have a different opinion of him when it comes to draft day. Maybe he won't be. If he does well, maybe he won't be a seventh-round pick. Maybe they'll take him a little bit higher. You know, so I think those are the three players with something to prove.
Yeah, definitely a lot to prove. And I'd also have to echo that, you know, just Austin dominating at the Shrine game, that should happen. He should be at the Shrine game. And, you know, that's kind of what we expect. But we'll wait and see how he performs. Another guy that I'm looking at as well, I mean, obviously, it's a questionable decision. We'll get into that a little bit later. But the quiz, young Mr. Rogers, the OSU back, very undersized. A lot will depend on that particular 40 time. I mean, being that small, he's expected to be a 4-4 guy. And, you know, it'd be nice if he was sub 4-4, but he's really going to have an impressive time after coming out of school early.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's got a big handicap with that lack of size. So not only does he have to show speed, but he has to show quickness, you know. Also, when those, you know, three cone drills, he's got to show something there you know, that particular competition really, I think, a lot of times separates the good backs from the great backs.
Absolutely, and those agility drills certainly. Moving on to three prospects that will likely upgrade their draft stock. I mean, it's, you know, not necessarily because they're such great football players, but there's going to be some guys in Indy, Ralph, that were just born to do some of these drills. I mean, they're just that good athletically. Why don't you give us three guys you really expect to blow it up?
Well, the first guy is Titus Young. I mean, when you talk about a guy that's got that perfect blend of shiftiness and straight line speed in one package, that's Titus Young. But still, you know, even when I watched him during the Senior Bowl, there were some things that made me scratch my head about him. Particularly, he's not the best. He doesn't have the best hands in the world. And so a lot of times he allowed that ball to get inside of him too much. And to me, he's got to show me a little bit more. But I think at the combine, this guy has got, as I said, the speed and the shiftiness and those physical tools to just make scouts and GMs just go gaga over him. I expect him to do very, very well. Another guy who doesn't quite have the measurables of a Titus Young, but I think will also impress, is a guy like Dwayne Harris, the receiver out of East Carolina. I've been a big fan of his for a while now. Again, maybe he doesn't have the great straight line speed, but what he does have is he's a great route runner. He's got the sudden burst off the line. I think he'll do well in the three-cone drill, and I think that, you know, I think at the end of the week, a lot of people might really be impressed with him, and he might come away maybe even being considered a poor man's Percy Harvin. And then finally, another guy who, quite frankly, has a lot to prove because we haven't really seen him in a while, and that's the big defensive end out of Iowa, one of my favorite players, Adrian Claiborne, a guy who was supposed to play in the Senior Bowl. And now you're hearing that, you know, maybe he wasn't really 100% during the season. Maybe that's why he checked out of that game. But regardless, you know, he really does have a lot to prove because, quite frankly, his senior season wasn't nearly as good as his junior season was. And so I think, you know, here's a guy that I think's got a lot of tools, a lot of good physical tools and skills and raw power to just blow people away. I mean, you know, you want to give me that, you know, he didn't have a great season in his senior year, that's fine. But I've seen this guy just dominate games like a lot of guys can't do. So to me, he's an exceptional player, and I expect him to do well.
Yeah, you know, Titus Young teased us in the media room about running a 4.2, so I'm eagerly anticipating what he does in Indy. And just to add a couple more guys to the list, I think the Pittsburgh wideout, Johnny Baldwin, I mean, I think he's just going to show up, and he is that type of receiver to where he shouldn't be that big, shouldn't be that fast, very good straight-line athlete. I think he's going to show up to combine, not only pass that elevator test, but really turn in a great 40 time. And also, this one's a bit of a gimme, Ralph, but you'll have to forgive me. Brandon Burton, the Utah corner, this guy is not only just a track star, former junior Olympian in the 200 meters. I think he's just going to torch that 40 time. I really expect a big performance of him and something that's, you know, that is in his wheelhouse. I mean, that's going to improve his draft stock.
Yeah, I could see that. I always liked Burton. He's got the long arms. He's got the physical style of play that I really like about him. So, yeah, I mean, if he can improve his technique a little bit, I could definitely see this guy being a real player at the next level.
Now, they all can't be winners, Ralph, and there's going to be some guys that, you know, be it as may, it hurt their stock here in Indy because of poor workouts and suspect times. Are there some prospects right now that you're worried about that might actually damage their draft stock after it's all said and done here in Indy?
Yeah, and I'm going to start off with one guy that you've mentioned before, and that's Greg Jones out of Michigan State. You know, not the type of guy, not the kind of explosive back that's going to make a lot of big plays, more of a run stuffer. I don't know if, you know, the combine is going to be conducive to his talents in terms of him, you know, putting his best foot forward. Another guy that I happen to like is Ori Lemon, another linebacker. Again, a good run stuffer, instinctive guy, a guy that can get through the gaps, but not the type of guy that's going to really cover, you know, guys out of the backfield. He's not that type of linebacker. So, you know, maybe those two down linebackers, I think, might not do so well in Indy. And then finally, another guy that I think might disappoint a little bit is DJ Williams, the tight end out of Arkansas. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, I think, you know, this guy is a very good athlete, but I don't know what type of player he's going to be at the next level. I don't think he's going to be a traditional tight end. He's kind of undersized. To me, he looks more like a fullback or an H-back. And, you know, really, he's not an explosive player. Yeah, he gets a lot of good speed, a lot of good build-up speed. He does have that to make plays. But he lacks burst off the line. He's got stiff hips. Not a great route runner. Doesn't get in and out of his breaks quickly enough. So, to me, he's not an elite talent. And I think that, you know, maybe some of those flaws could come to the forefront during the Indy Combine coming up in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely it does, because really it's the one thing he does well is he's got the hands, obviously. But
mm-hmm.
I was a little suspect myself, measured in 6'1.5", and you do have to ask yourself, where does this guy fit? And it's you know, not going to be easy for Dick, because he's just not that traditional tight end, very undersized. Might be a nice fit for Indianapolis if they're getting all those injuries to tight ends. You could move DJ all around. Another fella I'm worried about, and want your feedback before. I know it's up to the minute here, Ralph. What about the Wisconsin Badger? Came out early. John Clay, this is a big back. I'm expecting a pretty slow 40 time here.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, to me, what worried me about John Clay at the next level is the fact that he shows this tendency to put on a lot of weight. I mean, I think he's a limited guy. I think he could be maybe like a goal line back, but I definitely don't see him being a feature back. To me, he just doesn't have that that explosiveness, that agility that you need at the next level. To me, he's just like a big plodding type of back.
Yeah, it's going to be rough, and once again, that's a guy you've got to question. Why again did you come out? It's going to be a rough go of things, Mr. John Clay, but hey, doesn't mean he can't produce. Prove me wrong, John Clay. Ralph, I've kept you on long, but it's only because you bring the NFL draft knowledge we love. Thank you so much for joining us this week.
It's been my pleasure.
All right, once again, that was Ralph, the Reverend Mancini, Executive Editor, NFL Draft Bible Podcast. And, folks, while I have your attention, there is a relaunch. We're getting a makeover, just to let you know, tell you all about. It's bigger than New Year's for us, because the relaunch should be epically cool. Better late than never, fully operational, brand new, spanking updated rankings, projections. We got the scouting reports you want and love, and of course, on location interviews, podcasts. NFLDraftBible.com is where you need to go to be in the know for college football and the wonderful world of the NFL draft. Yes, better than Christmas, the best day of the year, only 77 days away, and we want to get you involved out there. Just to be in the know, we also have our On the Clock podcast with area bloggers. We've got some very reputable people that follow the actual teams, know better about their needs than all. We're going to get their heads in there, pick their brains, get the recommendations you want. You know where to keep it. Now, we are going to move on. It's underclassmen talk, and it's what we have to cover, because not all of them are winners. Just like we said, there are some diaper dandies, that Dick Vitale likes to call them, that made a mistake in my mind, and some others that they're just going to be dominant no matter what happens. And kicking it off, you know, guys that would have benefited by staying. I look at Texas cornerback Aaron Williams, and I mean, this is a terrific athlete. We talked about, you know, guys that could just basically do whatever they want to do, track star, you name it, he's going to be exceptional. He's got great change of direction, speed, and acceleration, but boy, does he need some more experience and just technique. He really needs some more coaching up, and especially after a poor season as a Longhorn last year, it just, you know, not necessarily him, the whole team, I think he could have benefited definitely. He's still going to be a borderline first-round pick. He's such an athletic corner, but this is a guy that's in a very stacked cornerback class. Maybe he waits another year and is an elite selection. The other fellow we just covered, and I do like to be repetitive, but John Clay, I mean, live it up. Even Ron Dayne recommended John Clay should have stayed. I wish, you know, stay and enjoy the ride, because it's going to get rough at the next level for him. I don't know how he's going to survive at the NFL level with that lack of speed. And sure, you know, you need good big inside runners for certain situations. I just don't see him ever being more than a complimentary back, a situational ball carrier. The other fellow we did bring up as well, Jacquizz Rodgers, the Oregon State Beavers. You are the man in Beaver country and playing in Pac-10. I mean, that's the defenses that you could take advantage of with your speed, Jacquizz. It just seems like it's going to be a very tough road to hoe for you in the NFL. And finally, my boy, I still think he is going to be an elite player. I've got high hopes for Brian Williams of Virginia Tech, but once again, this was a bad season for the Hokies and a bad year for him in particular, nursing a hamstring injury all season long while, you know, my boy Darren Evans from Warren Central High School gets even healthier, starts to take carries away, and then the fabulous sophomore, I believe he's a redshirt sophomore, Wilson, David Wilson, in the Hokie backfield is just unbelievable. I've heard stories about how crazy athletic he is. So Ryan Williams, really, after a bad season, in which, you know, maybe another year in Virginia Tech, you get it healthier, train even harder, I think he may have benefited from another year in school. But there are underclassmen that, let's just face it, had to come out. It's their time. It's their time to shine the can't-miss prospects that we're going to touch on, because it's just out of obligation. We have to, because they are that good. First off, you know, my favorite is A.J. Green. This is obviously, I think, an underclassman that made an excellent decision here. There were rumors of this being such a stacked wide receiver position. Well, it didn't even matter if that was the case, which it is not, as a result of a few players staying in school. AJ will be the top wide receiver selected, and not only that, is still vying, I believe, for first player off the board. Also, Daquan Bowers of Clemson, I think this is another can't miss. And for people that think he's only a one-year wonder, he just turned it on this year, we question his motor, we question his motivation. I think I just see a very raw kid talking to his agent. He said that he actually doesn't have a lot of knowledge, very rough around the edges, did not know very much terminology either. And, you know, they're telling the agent that, hey, once he actually starts to grasp some of these initial concepts, sky is the limit. So I think that's another first rounder. And the last one, can't miss, Marcel Darius. I mean, take it or leave it, you're going to put him on the field from day one. He's going to be starting the next 10 years. He's a dominant big man with not only terrific strength, but quickness off the ball. And we saw how much havoc he could wreak in the SEC. I see him doing that easily at the next level. And another underclassman, just, you know, not only to watch for, I don't think a lot of people give the credit where credit is due, is Corey Legit. And yes, the name is indicated. I have to make the obligatory joke there as well. He is very legit. The Illinois big man is so fast off the ball, extremely young prospect. I believe he's only recently turning 21, but it's not necessarily the youngin' out there with the bigs. No, he is the man amongst boys. I think Legit's another can't-miss guy. But to close the underclassmen talk, before we get the main man, we have founder and CEO Rick Ceratella joining us later in the hour. Three underclassmen that may struggle at the next level because, like we say, hey, they can't all be winners. Jordan Todman's a guy that I'm not understanding the hype. Why people are this crazy about a guy that, once again, very diminutive size, and for being a smaller back, I haven't seen the shiftiness that it's going to take to bring about the advantageous holes, the creativity. It's just not there. I don't really see too much different from his predecessor, Donald Brown, and we all know how well he did. Fool me once, UConn Huskies, not again, ha-ha. I have to say it. I just don't understand the hype around Todman. Yes, you know, he could be productive. I could be wrong, but at the same time, I'm a lot more excited about guys like Kendall Hunter, who I just saw, a multi-purpose threat like DeMarco Murray, even the DeLone Carter from Syracuse, who we just brought up. I see more NFL back when I look at those guys, as opposed to Todman, which I think this is a guy that declared early who may struggle at the next level. And secondly, Tandon Doss. And no, I am not picking on Ben Davis Giants, because that's a rival high school in the area I grew up in, even though I don't like Ben Davis Giants. Tandon Doss, the Indiana Hoosier, it's just kind of puzzling as to why, you know, he would come out as far as the fit in this class and where he'll be drafted. But obviously you have to look at the coaching staff being fired, the quarterback is leaving it. I guess that's just made the decision for Doss. At the same time, I don't know where he fits in. He does have the height, but he's very lanky, doesn't take contact well, and for a guy that's supposed to be some kind of kick returner, I'm not so sure the speed is there either of how he's going to gain separation against pro corners. You know, I've seen a few Hoosier games, and I'll just say that much. And another fellow in the area, Randall Cobb, Mr. Everything for Kentucky. There is hope here. He was just so effective at throwing the ball, running the ball, the wild top formation that they had for UK this year. That's a guy I look at, and I'm not so sure it's going to be just instant impact like some folks may be thinking. I just don't see how that's going to happen. Be that as it may, though, we are going to move along down the road. And just to let you know, once again, we are coming at you every single week, every single Thursday. It's Draft Digest Weekly, and we happen to be on the Fantasy Sports Channel, at least last I checked. So all you have to do is go to www.fsc.fm at 5 p.m. on Thursday. We're going to be broadcast live, and also just blogtalkradio.com/allaccessfootball. Type it in. You can listen to it anytime you want, accessible on iTunes as well. And, of course, be ready. We've got all the goodies ready for you as the Combine approaches. We got our podcast section, of course, the All-Star events that happen, as well as the On the Clock podcast coming up, the stuff you want to know. But it is pre-draft hype. The rumors are flying like mad, which is why we had to get the CEO, the founder, the president, the czar of NFL, DraftBible.com. We've got them on live. It's the RIC in NYC. How is it going, Rick?
It's going well, Joe. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it wouldn't be a show without it. And we're getting fired up because it's already 77 days away. It couldn't get here fast enough for me, but it gives us time to boil it down, Rick. You want to talk to us a little bit about, you know, prospects that may have some character concerns heading in that's affecting their stock. Guys that, you know, without it might be a higher pick, but right now the question marks abound.
Well, I think first and foremost, number one is Mr. Ryan Mallett from Arkansas. I think that, you know, if you look at the raw tools and skills, some people would value Mr. Mallett as the top quarterback in the draft class. But it seems like, you know, I talk to a lot of other draft nicks out there, a lot of other independent NFL draft websites. It seems like that, you know, everybody has the same information on Ryan Mallett, but nobody really wants to go public with it. It's that controversial. It's that newsworthy. It's that off-the-field issues that are a major concern, but nobody wants to go on record with it. And it kind of reminds me of, you know, I don't think we've seen a quarterback with this much trouble off the field, I'm going to say, since Dan Marino. Of course, we had the rumors with Dan Marino back in the class of 83, rumors circulating about his off-the-field behavior. Turned out to be quite all right with him. Ryan Mallett, it remains to be seen.
No, definitely an interesting prospect that, you know, you just keep hearing these whispers, and it is preventing him to be that potential top 10. A guy I wanted to ask you about, and we talked to all these players, we asked them who was the toughest, you know, who was your best competition. All the wide receivers I ask, Rick, they all say Chris Rucker, and they don't just say Chris Rucker, they say Chris L. Rucker, because they give him that much respect. But right now, with the off-the-field issues, this guy isn't worth almost a pick in some GM's eyes.
Well, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. You mentioned Chris Rucker. You know, here's a big physical corner coming in at 6'1", over 200 pounds, not afraid to mix it up at the line of scrimmage. But I do think that some team may possibly take a risk, gamble, roll the dice in the middle rounds, depending on his how his interviews go later on this month in February at the NFL Scouting Combine, where you will be, sir. And, you know, I know there's a couple other players I wanted to touch base on. And, you know, last week we saw at the Texas vs. Nation game, Darrell Johnson Koulianos, TJK from the University of Iowa. We saw him get arrested for, you know, possibly distributing some narcotics there, but it seems like he went to court and got it slapped down to a misdemeanor, and it now appears that he has worked his way back into the conversation of a later round draft pick. So DJK from Iowa, definitely a player to keep an eye on. It would be hard to fathom some of these wide receivers going ahead of him. You know, he was someone who had a second or third round grade talent. Someone who may now go in the fourth or fifth would be a great bargain pick. If you think back to last year, Mike Williams, there were some character issues with him. I believe he slid to the third or fourth round. We all know how that story goes. And then, you know, the last play I want to touch base on, someone that I heard you and the Reverend talking about earlier in the show, that's Marvin Austin from North Carolina. You know, he was suspended for the whole year, improper contact with agents, but came back like a villain, chilling in Orlando where you were down at the East-West Shrine game. I know he had a big week during practice and also did well in the game. I know the Reverend had some concern about his fatigue, but I think he may be a little bit rusty, someone here who may go in the second or third round and has a first-round grade value.
Oh, definite first-round talent, that's for sure. It was great to see him play, and I think it's a good point on Johnson Koulianos. He's really kind of reminded scouts what he could do at Texas, or the NFLPA, rather, just to say, yes, I am still an elite-type player with my route-running skills. Flashing that, it refreshes people's memory, I think, a little bit. Last one before we move on, Rick, that I think we definitely have to comment on is the guy who was in Mobile, Alabama, once again, reminding scouts, Phil Taylor from Baylor, the former Penn State guy. I mean, I think to me there's no question he should be a first-rounder, but what about these character concerns on Taylor? Is there any chance he doesn't get into that first round?
Yeah, there's a possibility. I mean, if you look at Big Mount Cody last year, a lot of people thought he would be a first-round pick based on his nose-tackle abilities, and that was minus the character concern. So I think right now Phil Taylor is one of those borderline guys, but, you know, a lot of teams, Joe, shift into that 3-4 defense, and more so now than ever. I think there's about three or four teams this season converting from that 4-3 defense over to the 3-4 defense. So now, you know, nose tackles are going to be a hot commodity, and As the good Reverend will tell you, hey, brother, can I buy a nose tackle if you're a subscriber to the NFL Draft Bible? You know all about that article. And, you know, hey, nose tackles don't grow on trees, so there's a possibility he sneaks in the back end of that first round somewhere between 22 and 32. But I think at the end of the day, he's a lock-in for a top 40 pick the way that this 3-4 trend is going.
Yeah, he's a unique man, to say the least, just watching him play. As far as what we've saved for the last, we saved the goodies for the last, folks. It's sleeper time. The prospects, Rick, that could be had later in the draft that are going to make some noise, and not only that, make an impact in the game. Go ahead and kick us off with a few.
Yeah, you know, I want to start off on offense here because Deion Lewis, the University of Pittsburgh running back, some people question whether or not it was the right decision for him to declare early. I think that, you know, with Dave Wanstead leaving Pittsburgh and the pro-style offense that they ran, if you look at the body of work, if you look at the game tape, maybe not so much this past year, but the year before, you know, Deion Lewis is a guy that runs low to the ground. He's a one-cut-and-up style of runner. I think he would excel very much so in the zone style of running offense. And he received a third-round grade from the advisory committee, but, you know, looking around, I don't see anybody that really has him in that third-round range. I think most people project Deion Lewis as a mid- to late-round grade. I think this is a guy that if you pluck him up in the third or fourth round, he actually has the ability to carry the workload and be a feature running back at the next level. So I definitely like Deion Lewis. I actually think that he may be a better pro prospect than his offensive counterpart, Jonathan Baldwin, believe it or not. So after receiving some criticism, I think Deion Lewis might have made the right decision, although he might not go in the first or second round. He has the opportunity to make a nice payday on his second contract. I want to go over to the defensive side, Joe, and talk about my man Jaleel Brown from the University of Colorado. Now, here's a guy flying under the radar, excelled in one-on-one coverage last season, playing opposite of Jimmy Smith. Some people believe Jimmy Smith is a first-round pick. You know, I'm going to tell you right now, based on some various NFL personnel that I've spoken to around the league, Jaleel Brown right now is a guy that is actually considered to be possibly a better prospect than his teammate Jimmy Smith. You know, coming into the season, Jimmy Smith had a first-round grade based on the Blessed Owen National, but I want to say that Jaleel Brown actually outplayed him throughout the year, has had a strong performance so far in the college football All-Star games. So I'm looking for Jaleel Brown to improve upon his draft stock, have a very strong combine, and continue to climb that ladder up until, you know, maybe the back end of the first round or early second round. So Jaleel Brown from the University of Colorado, definitely one to watch for. And the last guy I want to touch base, I'm going to flip it and reverse it on you, go back to the offense. And he might not necessarily go in the later rounds, but, you know, looking at the mock drafts from around the webisodes or the internet life around Mock Draft Central, I never see Kyle Randolph in the first round. University of Notre Dame tight end suffered an injury much like Rob Gronkowski a year ago. A similar situation. I think that Kyle Rudolph is a guy that is going to make a team very happy no matter where he goes. Right now, I don't see him going anywhere in the first round. I think he might go somewhere in the second round, early to mid-second round, but I think that you're getting a top 15 possible quality talent in Kyle Rudolph, someone who's going to make an immediate impact, someone like a Rob Gronkowski, someone like a Jermaine Gresham. Don't let the injury fool you. Kyle Rudolph is a top-caliber pass-catching tight end, and that does it for my sleepers.
Well, you hit right at my heartstrings there. A Golden Domer that has started since day one. He set foot on campus and was a playmaker. So, yeah, I would agree that, you know, he's off the radar loses the whole season due to injury, but, and hey, if he falls in the second round a la Gronkowski, then yeah, a team's going to get a tremendous bargain. And for the price they pay in the return, they're getting, before we run out of time, some other guys want to get some feedback from you on Rick. And first off, I think as far as the offensive side, Greg Little, the wide receiver from UNC, another guy that lost the 2010 season. I think he really needed that 2010 season, but still, there's a lot of talent there. I think he's a big-time sleeper that, you know, if it's a third or a fourth round for a team, they could get a number one type of prospect if it pans out.
I agree 1,000%. I think, you know, the UNC prospects are probably the most intriguing because a lot of these guys were involved with that off-the-field agent conduct. A lot of these guys did miss time. A lot of these guys now have character issues circulating them. I can guarantee you, Joe, not all these kids are bad kids. Hey, maybe none of them are bad kids, but they're guilty by association, so their draft stock is taking a hit. And that's what the leading up, all that built-up hype, the draft process, the all-star games, the combine, the pro day workouts, you know, it all leads up to draft day, and this is an opportunity to capitalize. And like you said earlier in the segment, remind people just how talented he is. But, you know, when character issues surround you, it seems like a piggyback situation where, you know, once one reputable, you know, source has that label or that tag on you, it seems like a lot of people piggyback, and sometimes, as we mentioned, you get guilty by association. But these UNC prospects do have a lot of talent, and it'll be interesting to see where they go. You know, they did a great job over there at UNC developing these players, and Butch Davis, you know, maybe not has the cleanest resume, but does know how to seek out and find some talent.
Oh, they're talented. That is for certain. Before we get out of the sleepers, I can't help but I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up Julius Thomas, the tight end from Portland State. I got to see him live there in Orlando, and the big talk is the basketballer. People really want to compare him to JerMichael Finley, Rick, but he's his own player. I think he's definitely a value a team might see late.
Yeah, you know, it seems like we have one of these players at the tight end position every year. Last year was Jimmy Graham, if you remember, who came in and played very well for the Saints this past season. You know, hey, this kid from Portland State, he's been reportedly clocked in the 4.62 range, which is very impressive for a tight end. And, hey, Joe, I don't know about you, but if you played for Jerry Glanville, you're all right in my book.
You know, that brings a little rep along with it in itself. Before we run out of time, Rick, we better just get to the prospects as this draft approaches, overhyped guys that, you know, they're going to be selected maybe in the first round or with a high pick, whereas maybe they should not be. There's some players right now that you've got in your mind that really seem way too hyped.
Yeah, I know you're short on time, so I'll touch base on them quickly. First off, that comes off the top of my head is Prince Omakamora from Nebraska. You know, a lot of people view him as a top 10 or top 15 overall pick. I'm going to tell you that, you know, a lot of people that I talk to feel like he may actually be better suited to play free safety at the next level. And if that's the case, you don't want to risk using a top 10 pick on Prince Omakamora. I'm going to move on to the offensive side of the ball where Daniel Thomas, if you go by the Blesto and National preseason rankings, he received a first-round grade prior to the season. Still very high amongst draft boards. A lot of people have him in the second-round range. You know, I want to see what he runs at the NFL scouting combine. We don't put a lot of stock into that 40 time, but when you're close to that 4.60 range and rumored to be a first or second round pick, you know, I remember Jonathan Dwyer a year ago who had a first round grade before the season started, actually slipped to the sixth round to the Steelers, I believe, and not sure he's even on the roster. Maybe he made the practice squad, but I could see Daniel Thomas doing the slip and slide down draft boards as well. And the last guy here, to maybe your disappointment, Joe, Jonathan Baldwin, you know, I talked about his teammate Deion Lewis as a possible sleeper. I think Jonathan Baldwin, Baldwin equals bust, maybe. You know, I know he had some quarterback issues there at the University of Pittsburgh, but for someone the stature of his size, the size and speed combination, I just, you know, wonder where the production was this past season. You know, I look at a guy that was very similar in size and speed, a man by the name of Calvin Johnson, who played at Georgia Tech, playing in the triple option offense. No quarterback thrown to him. Still put up his numbers. Just disappointed that the production wasn't there for Jonathan Baldwin. He's projected to be a late first or early second round pick. I might be a little bit hesitant there.
Yeah, and I've heard that scouts are questioning the motivation there exactly. Does he love football? So definitely great stuff, and it's been a pleasure. Can't thank you enough for joining us on the Draft Digest Weekly, Rick.
Hey, Joe, always good to be here. Greatly appreciate your hard work and dedication. Hardest working staff in the NFL draft business industry, and glad you're part of the team. We'll talk soon.
Absolutely. The countdown to the draft never stops at NFLDraftBible.com, folks. So dial us back in every single Thursday is when you need to catch it at 5 p.m. We will talk to you all next week. Until then, stay classy.